right, so today's talk, I'm calling Dedicating the Merit of Our Practice. What does it mean? This, once again, as almost all of my last recent Dharma talks have been, is in answer to a question someone submitted. And the question was, what does it mean to dedicate the merit of our practice? I found myself offering to do that with someone. I had no idea what it meant. However, I was interested in giving support, similar to when you say you will pray for someone. But saying you will pray for someone is fraught in American Buddhist context. I would like to know more about this practice and whether I, as a single Buddhist, not a Sangha, can make that statement. So what this question is about is, so you, if you've attended our chanting service, you will have noticed this dedication, which I'm going to share with you in a moment. But we'll also do this, you know, at the end of the Dharma talk, and at the end of a class, we dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. So at the end of our chanting service, we say, any act of devotion or compassion, no matter how small, creates change in the world. Even little children in their play who gather sand and make it into stupas, all such beings have fulfilled the Buddha way. And that line, even little children in their play who gather sand and make it into stupas, are little are memorial mounds. So this would be kids playing in the sand, making little memorial mounds for the Buddha. So that line is from the Lotus Sutra. And then we say we dedicate the merit of our practice to living Dharma teachers, and then we list some living Dharma teachers who have been important to me and other Sangha members. And then we say we also dedicate the merit to all those who are experiencing pain and suffering, including those who are suffering alone, those without access to sufficient food and water, and other things. And then we also list, we name individuals who are submitted by Sangha members. So if you know someone who is ill or in difficulty, you can send their name to our, you know, Zen Center email, and that will get on the list to be read aloud. And then we also say a few specific things, like refugees fleeing violence, oppression, poverty, and climate change, or Uyghur Muslims, Muslim victims of genocide in China. And then we also follow that up with, we dedicate the merit to those who are in the transition of death, including, and then we name individuals and also some more general statements. And we say, may we and they be serene throughout these transitions. May we aspire to turn the Dharma wheel unceasingly and thereby free the world from every tragedy of war, injustice, and human-caused disaster. May great compassion cause all to awaken to our interdependence with our planet, its ecosystems, and wondrous creatures. May we, together with all sentient beings, realize the enlightened way. So in talking about this practice and why we do it and what it means, first I'll give you some background. That is on the meaning of merit in a Buddhist context. So merit is generated by karma, by willful conscious activity, by beings. So there's four kinds of karma, four kinds of behaviors that lead to certain outcomes. There's negative karma with negative results, which, you know, it's injurious behavior of body, speech, or mind, and leads to suffering in some way. The second is positive karma with positive results, which leads to pleasant experiences and benefit. The third kind of karma is mixed, with mixed results. So that's probably most of what we do, right? And then the fourth kind of karma is that which leads to the ending of karma or liberation, basically synonymous with practice. So all of this is this these definitions of karma and merit, as I'll get to, are kind of largely based in this worldview of transmigration, which Buddhism arose in. And you may have heard me talk about this before, but the way that I see it anyway is that the idea of rebirth or reincarnation or transmigration is something that Buddhism grew up in a world where that was assumed the way that things worked. But believing that, at least literally, is not necessary to Buddhism. It's not integral to practicing Buddhism. It's not like you have to believe that in order for Buddhism to work. There are Buddhists and Buddhist sects which emphasize that, which do teach that we are reborn and that has implications for our life and practice, but it's not necessary. So just that is a little disclaimer. But within this worldview of transmigration, the idea that once you die, some part of you goes on and takes rebirth again in this world. And the condition, what affects what kind of rebirth you move toward, what kind of rebirth you have, is affected by what you've done previously. So it depends on your previous karma. Negative, positive, mixed, what's the balance there? And then how much practice did you do in order to kind of clean up your karma, not generate too much karma? And this is one of the places that I feel like the modern approach differs quite a lot, is that the ancient Indian view was the highest goal, the highest spiritual goal was not to be reborn again. So in some ways, you didn't want to generate positive karma either, because then that might cause you to come back. So in a way, you were trying to just kind of disengage from all of it except for practice. And that was the kind of the earlier Buddhist view, but then as Mahayana Buddhism developed, we came up with the ideal of the Bodhisattva, who vows to be reborn in this world until all beings are saved. So therefore we're not trying to, avoid positive karma, although we are trying to also we're trying to do a lot of that karma that, leads to liberation as well. So certain Buddhist cultures, in certain Buddhist cultures, even to this day, generating merit, so merit is the good stuff that comes from the good karma, generating merit is serious business. So while the monastics might be aimed, supposedly, at that fourth kind of karma and not trying to come back, generally speaking, lay people are understood to be aiming at fortunate circumstances in this lifetime and for a fortunate rebirth. I mean, there's nothing, there's nothing wrong with that. It's understood, like, well, I mean, if you don't want to check out this lifetime, fine, generate positive karma and merit, and then you'll have a fortunate rebirth. So, this is typical of some Southeast Asian cultures where support of Buddhist monastics and temples, or in some places, as you're familiar in, like in Thailand, ordaining for a while, is they are important ways of generating merit. And sponsoring certain religious activities also. You might make a donation, and then we would dedicate the morning chanting service to you. And it's like then you share in the merit that is generated by that activity. But of course, you can also generate merit by living a moral and generous life, being good to your family, being an honest businessman, etc. So when we dedicate the merit of our practice, We're saying we want to transfer any merit, any benefit or positive result over to another person, another being, other beings. And so actually this is often called, more properly called, the transfer of merit. So I generated the merit through my practice, through my positive actions, and I'm going to transfer it to others. And this is a very generous act. You know, in an ordinary circumstance, when say we're enacting generosity or morality or whatever, we're conscious of some merit accruing to us. That may not be our main motivation, but, you know, it assuages our conscience. It builds a positive relationship with people. We gain a reputation for being a good person. We feel good. But in this case, we're saying it want any of that benefit, however subtle, to go to someone else. And so in answer to the question, this is definitely something we can do as an individual or in the context of Sangha. Now, that sentiment is nice, but are we saying we really believe we can transfer merit to someone else? So remember, Buddhism is a non-theistic religion. Now, in many places in the world and in history, Buddhists also believe in God or gods, but the practice is no way dependent on the existence or support of those deities. As a matter of fact, in many cases, those gods or spirits or deities they're seen as Dharma protectors. It's almost like, you know, you get their endorsement for practice, but the practice doesn't depend on them. So there's no supernatural being to magically reallocate the merit at your request. You know, like, I generated this merit, would you please transfer it to this sick person, and then they can, you know, move the cloud of merit over or something like that. Instead, karma, even in the context of this view of transmigration, is viewed as a pretty impersonal law of causation. This is the way things work. Applied to human behavior, conscious choices, you know, this is the way things tend to go. If you lie and steal and cheat, you're going to feel negative karma for that sooner or later. Even if you kind of escape it for now, you might say the thief looks behind the door. You are undermining your own practice. You are undermining your own emotional and psychological well-being, to say the very least. So you experience the results of karma in a very impersonal way. That doesn't have to be anybody upstairs punishing or pulling the strings or keeping track. This is just something that happens, like physical laws. It's incredibly complex, and it's influenced by our practice and by our personality and all that, but it still is just the way things work. So if I commit a bank robbery, I can't transfer the negative effects over to you. Now, I may be able to somehow get you blamed and escape overt punishment. And that's that, but that's kind of a different matter, right? This idea of behavioral law, cause and effect, like, I'm not going to escape. Matter of fact, I'm only going to make it worse, right? If I've ruined your life. So now I've compounded my negative karma. And you may be unfortunate to be blamed, but you didn't do it. So you are not experiencing that negative karma of that act in the same way. So if we can't escape the negative, like, why are we talking about, like, I'm going to transfer the positive? So just as Christians and Jews and Muslims and Hindus and people of all different religions have different views of prayer, different views, different senses of their relationship to God or what is greater, so do Buddhists have different views. So some Buddhists believe in real effect, that there are, if you will, supernatural forces at work in the world, and if you have some merit to transfer and you sincerely dedicate it, that you know, something really happens. And it may just happen, end up having a tangible positive benefit to them. You can hope. You can't guarantee it, but the sincerity and frequency of your prayers can help. But then, just as in other religions, there are Buddhists who do not believe in any way in anything supernatural and find dedications of merit strangely out of place in Buddhism. And so such folks may just go along with this practice or opt out of it. And then there's everyone in between these two extremes, like me. I'm closer to the atheist end, if you will, even though this doesn't have anything to do with belief in a god, but I'm closer to the atheist end where I have not experienced anything in my own direct experience to tell me that there's some kind of supernatural force out there. It doesn't make sense to me. And our own direct experience is, in Buddhism, that's the litmus test for the validity of the teaching for us. Can we verify it for ourselves? The effectiveness of it. But I'm also a little agnostic in the sense that I know I can't prove the absence of such forces. And I also find myself wondering how transfer of merit might work in a universe which is profoundly interconnected, which science is beginning to prove. I mean, if there is action at a distance due to quantum entanglement, why can't there be transfer of merit? In any case, you might say that regardless of the reality of how things work in the world, it's the thought that counts. Whatever the effects of dedicating merit, it sure feels appropriate, doesn't it? After we spend a couple hours contemplating our navels and discussing Buddhist teachings about understanding ourselves and achieving liberation from suffering, we think about other people. We remind ourselves that there are people who are suffering, beings who have recently passed into the great mystery of death, which we ourselves will as well. That there are circumstances in the world that are unjust, that need our attention. And this in and of itself seems like a good thing to do, to shift the focus off ourselves, to bear witness to what is going on in the world. And I've been developing in the context of my climate activism, the concept of bearing witness as a bodhisattva practice, meaning exposing ourselves to the suffering in the world without, in a way that is independent of the question of whether there is something we can do to fix it. Because a lot of times we might just not want to look because the pain is too much if we don't know that we can fix it. But that can keep us from looking, from witnessing. So we just open our hearts to bear witness to the suffering, which then has an effect on us. It may prime us to respond at some point. It may inform us so that we recognize the opportunity to take action at some point. So then this act of bearing witness, even if it doesn't have any immediate positive effects for others, definitely has a positive effect overall. But then, what are some of the pitfalls of the idea of dedicating merit? And I think the same goes here with any kind of prayer. which I do have a couple podcast episodes on Buddhist prayer and how we hold that. And one of them is, of course, thinking that's enough. Now this relieves us of our responsibility for action. So sending thoughts and prayers has become a bit of a trigger phrase these days that can arouse a lot of outrage because it so often comes from people who are not just not taking meaningful action on change, but maybe actually be standing in the way of meaningful action. So the suggestion in such thoughts and prayers is that whatever terrible thing has happened, it is utterly beyond human intervention, and all we can do is pray about it. Now, there's nothing wrong in and of itself with sending thoughts and prayers. The problem is really the inaction that is often associated with it. So if we chant our dedication in the Zendo and feel like, I've done my part, now we can just put these suffering beings out of our mind because, you know, we sent them some merit. I think that's probably not the idea. It's also a pitfall to see the benefits that might occur as something you do, something you're responsible for. In this sense, you are separate from those to whom you send merit. I'll pray for you. And you, on your part, should feel grateful or find some solace because I'm doing this thing for you. And I also wouldn't mind if everybody knew that I'm sending thoughts and prayers. And everyone know what an empathetic and generous person I am. And another trap, there may be more, but is of course expecting results. It seems like many spiritual practices of human beings arise out of some kind of truth. But these truths are often, usually these deeper truths, are ineffable. They're ungraspable. And they're best communicated, best hinted at by myth and storytelling, and poetry and song and ritual. Techniques that align us with a deeper truth, say interdependence, but doesn't get too specific. Almost all practices, religious practices, can be interpreted very, very literally as well. And this is fundamentalism. It is usually, and this a really literal interpretation, usually, if not always, leads to some fallacies and suffering. For example, there may be, and I'm sure there is, a profound connection between body and mind. They're not two separate things. So it is possible to affect our physical health positively and negatively, depending on our state of mind, on the way that we relate to the world, and we can work on that, right? And it manifests physically, and so, you know, we can take responsibility for some of our physical experiences by working on our minds. But the Christian Science belief that all illnesses are caused by your own mind is like taking this to an extreme and, you know, making it a very literal thing. Taking what's something that we sense is true, there's a truth there, and then just, you know, seizing on that, setting practitioners up for failure, because as one of the Buddhist truths, right? We all get sick and we all die. And there may be a way in which the karma that I generate in this lifetime continues after my death because of the reality of interdependence. And there may be a sense in which I doesn't entirely end with my death, that something may pass on after the end of my physical body. But if I get really fixated and obsessed on how each of my actions is going to affect my rebirth, or how your circumstances must be due to something you did in the past, and therefore I can blame you for them and I don't have to take responsibility for them. You know, like once you take it down that really literal road, it tends to generate suffering. So, I don't know, I guess the message is then we dedicate merit, we pray, we hold these things kind of lightly. You know, it's like, I don't know, feels right. Feels right to pray. Feels right to dedicate the merit. I don't know. I don't know what happens. I hope something happens. That'd be great if it happened. So when we dedicate the merit, you know, it's this act of generosity. We're not trying to escape this life. As bodhisattvas, we commit to being reborn until all beings are freed. So it doesn't make sense for me to hoard good karma, right? If I'm just going to, you know, if I'm going to get to the point where I could just opt out and, you know, go off into bliss, but I'm going to come back anyway, there's no point in me trying to amass good karma for myself. Just share it around because we're all in this together. But it is a deep practice if you think about the implications that you are saying, like, I'm going to take this merit and share it, as opposed to just trying to relieve my own suffering. And if there's any truth to rebirth, you maybe could have gotten a better rebirth if you had hoarded your merit. So I figured we might as well dedicate the merit. This act of generosity inoculates us against self-absorption in our practice, reminds us of interdependence, and challenges our self-concern at a profound level. So I will leave it there for comments and questions. Anybody who's in the cloud, just raise your hand like Katie just did, or physically, or whatever. And in the dirt sendo, if you want to say something, just come up here in this chair. Katie.
Oh, thanks very much. Can you hear me okay? Yeah, good. I'm using the different deals. I'm the one that asked that question because I was starting to do that and I wasn't sure if I wasn't being a little bit presumptuous. I was almost asking an adequate question because I was in a group where someone was, you know, visibly suffering, and I sort of felt moved. I wanted to do something for them, and there's a bunch of other Buddhists around, and so I said, I think I'd like to dedicate the merit of our practice to you. And then later I thought, kind of presumptuous, Katie, you know, and I don't think anybody there was going, no, not my karma, but, or, you know, not my merit, but it still felt, you know, I was wondering if I wasn't operating a little bit out of the minister paradigm that I'm in sometimes, but, so I guess, you know, reaction to that, and also that might be something that other people think about, you know, is there a hierarchy to doing that? Can you just burst out kind of like, Christians do, I'm gonna, you know, and so I just was, you know, I kind of had some second thoughts about it. And so I kind of wanted to run it by. So thank you for picking it up, but one thing I never thought was that there's like a little drop of merit that's floating out there and that I'm offering it to that person. I more think of it as, you know, God, you've touched my heart. I want to do something for you, you know. So anyway.
Well, thank you for the question. Yeah, your question about kind of the etiquette around it is valuable. I would say in that circumstance, it isn't. The names, for instance, that we read on our chant list, generally, like, we should check with somebody if they want their name chanted. Because sometimes people are private, right? They don't want to, Dennis, what's wrong with Dennis? You know, like, so you know, you might, like, if you want to put somebody on the merit list, you might ask if you could, you know, if it's, like, a famous person, and like Salman Rushdie, I figure we don't have to ask him. But so it's really more a matter of, you know, you could, in that circumstance, you could certainly, like, silently dedicate merit. But I think that person being kind of, they may appreciate it, but they might feel uncomfortable just kind of being called out, like, I'm going to pray for you. I don't know. I think I would be if I was, like, expressing vulnerability and difficulty, and then, I don't know, I guess I might be uncomfortable in the moment, but then afterwards I might think, like, who knows, maybe it'll help. So, I don't know, yeah, I guess you'd usually ask the person if that'd be okay. Paula, and then Shoketsu.
So, a couple of thoughts on this. For myself, I've been, as I think everybody, a lot of people in this group know, I've been in a lot of grief, and then my health deteriorated. And as someone says to me, without really listening to me, without being present, I will transfer merit for you, or I'll pray for you, I will punch them. So let's stay on Zoom so I can't hit anybody, because then I'll need to do lots of karma clearing. when people, in my experience, when I'm in severe pain, I don't need a nice plot. I need someone who will listen. And maybe after the listening, if they say, I'll transfer merit, or I'll pray for you, that would be helpful. But listen first. The other thing I wanted to share was, if I'm in a, I work very hard trying to help my body recover and my mind recover. And sometimes I break down and struggle, and I'm kind to myself, a lot kinder than I used to be when that happened. The other day I was walking through the grocery store parking lot, and sometimes all that work to recover is exhausting and you just have to break down. But I was walking through the grocery store parking lot, and there was a lady who was older than me, and she had a cane in her grocery cart, and she was putting her groceries in her vehicle, and she was parked in a disabled parking spot for people with issues with ability. So I stopped in my socially distanced way with my mask on, because she had a mask on too. And I asked her if I could take her cart for her back to the store. And she thanked me. And then I asked her, without touching her cane, if I could help her get her cane and close her trunk. And she said, no, I'm okay. I can do the cane, and the trunk has a button on my fob. So we had, you know, said, have a great day. And I don't know if she was suffering, but she has her challenges. But I, in connecting to her in that direct way, and not even talking about pain and suffering, just how can I help you right now? I felt better. And I gave her power to her to tell me to get lost, I'm okay, or yeah, take the cart, thank you. And then as I did my grocery shopping, I was using her cart, and I thought of her while I was grocery shopping. Then today I went to an auction. I went to meet a lady at a parking lot to pick up some items at an online auction for a dog rescue that I got. And we just chatted briefly, and then we were sharing about our dogs, and I told them how this one dog, Shiloh, I got after my husband had passed away. And then so we were talking about grief, and she was telling me about her husband, and he's in, just became institutionalized. And I looked at her eyes, and they were full of grief and sadness. And we just talked about, she just shared with me what she was going through. And eventually we stopped talking, and we went our separate ways. But I think in terms of really helping people, and it has to be connected with merit too, in some way, on a more metaphysical level, but that deep listening, that being present, and not trying to fix anybody, because we're all in pain and suffering. And if not right now, then later on we will be. And that's what my friends who are really, that I'm really close to, we could be talking about our dogs and I feel healed being around them, but they don't say anything to me about praying, or maybe they think I'll hit them. I don't know. But anyway, that's what I wanted to share. Just like listen deeply. And that is a way of prayer. That is a way of being present. That's silence.
Thank you so much for sharing. You're sharing in honesty.
Thank you. Punchy.
And you know, that key about, so it just makes me think of this other Buddhist teaching about generosity, and saying there's three levels of giving. And at the first level, you give someone what you yourself would want. You know, so this is when the little kid comes up and is like, you can have my half-eaten cookie. You know, I mean, that's a great gesture. You know, this is, I love this, and this is what I would want. So you're offering in a very sincere way, but you're offering what you would want. And then at the next level, you develop the ability to kind of listen and watch and learn and realize not everybody's like you. And then you give what that person would want. Maybe you have to ask, you know, but you give what that person would want. And then the third level is you give what's needed, which implies that we have developed some significant wisdom and discernment about being able to perceive even beyond maybe what the person consciously wants, but what is actually needed. So that's a, because I just also thinking of my aunt, Patty Andrea, is the first one that we recite on the merit list, and she loves it. She wants to be on our merit list. And every time I see her, about once a year, I tell her, you're still out. She has, you know, severe ongoing health problems. And she's just always like, Shoketsu.
Thank you. At the end of the merit list for people who are living and suffering, struggling, there's also, they say their name out loud, or bring to mind whoever you're thinking of, or, you know, someone who's not on the list, you could just think of them, or say their name out loud. Nobody does it very loud, but well, can you comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, that was my innovation.
Oh, it was?
Yeah. It's a good one. Just because, you know, I mean, sometimes there are people in the hall that, you know, they aren't aware that we have this list, or how you get somebody's name on the list, or, you know, sometimes something will happen recently and this name isn't on the list yet. And so, yeah, when we were all in the same physical space together, I think we started to develop more of a habit of speaking someone's, I mean, some people, you don't have to, but might speak somebody's name at a volume that people could hear us. But, you know, it's more complicated now. But if you are in the Cloud Zendo and you do want to speak somebody's name out loud during that part, you're welcome to unmute yourself and do so. Katie.
Well, just that I think when you speak the name out loud a little like that, it's kind of, it becomes more of a social act. Mm-hmm. And I like that idea that, you know, you people around me would be sharing the people in their life that maybe I don't know, but, you know, I find that a lovely practice.
Actually, I think you're reminding me that this wasn't my innovation, that I experienced it somewhere. And I think it might have been, I have a terrible memory, but I think it might have been during lockdown at an online Unitarian service, and there was some point at which everybody, like, just, you know, unmuted, and they said names of people that they were concerned about.
You're totally right. It's very, very much a practice in Unitarian Universalist churches to do some kind of a shared activity where joys and concerns is what's often called.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. And yeah. I guess that's one of the reasons why I like it so much. Probably I'm very comfortable with it. But go ahead.
Yeah, that's
also, don't you?
Yeah, go ahead, Ruth.
Also, Thich Nhat Hanh has a long prayer poem where he says their name, asking the reader, the listener, to say their name. He includes a prostitute, fictional character, in a way. He has on the list, including some sentient animal beings. So once COVID got started, I started doing metta, and it's just an evening practice I'm comfortable with. And I don't know, in a way, what good it's doing, but that doesn't stop me. And Hafiz says, we are always in the season of recognizing the sacred in our lives, or even if I'm not in a sangha, in a way, you know, whatever my daily experience is becomes my sangha. And I'll finish with Bernie Siegel, an oncologist, wrote many books on how to live with cancer, because people don't always die right away or die from cancer. And he put a note in the doctor's lounge dining room, where only the big MDs are allowed. He wrote the note, don't deny the power of prayer. He said the note didn't stay up there long before someone ripped it down. So I think we have our habits, and even if I'm only blessing the produce I'm juicing that morning, it's just, I guess, where my comfort level is. Thank you.
Thank you, Ruthann. Does anybody out there want to confess to having a negative or skeptical reaction to a dedication of merit?
I can go for it.
All right, Dave.
Let me sit down first. I didn't have a negative reaction to it, but when you started your talk today, I had no idea where you were going with it. Because being on the extreme secular side myself, I never thought more about that than dedicating a bridge to the marchers who came across this place, you know, or dedicating this library. It was just something you do in honor of the thing, but without any idea that you're actually sending them anything. We're just sort of like, you know, this is in honor of those people. We dedicate this practice, you know. And that, so yeah. I'm like, what is she going to talk about? We're just
no big deal. What's the... Yeah, yeah. Leah.
Yeah, I'm a little skeptic too, but I thought that as you were describing it, because I've always heard about merit, and I thought, oh, this is one of these like little karmic brownie points I hear about, you know, or whatever, and I just sort of da-da-da. But as you were describing it, I was thinking more like, maybe it's not transactional at all. Mm-hmm. Maybe it is more like, and this may be reiterating kind of what you're getting at, that it's more like opening a door that normally, so if you think about not doing it, normally we're all up like in our own self-concern, worrying about our own deal, our own karma or whatever. But if you go out there and you verbally say it and you have an intention and you have a wish, then it's like opening a door to further action or help or potential. Whereas before it wouldn't even be open.
I like that. I think that's a beautiful way to describe it, a beautiful metaphor. It's like it, yeah. I can't rephrase it a better way. Nice. I think, did somebody unmute? oh, Paula.
I had another point. Adin, can we wrote in the chat? Can I hope I can read this. Is that okay?
I can put it publicly. I think so. There you go.
It's about in my cool. Back in San Francisco. Is that okay, Adin? We were asked to say people's names out loud as well, and I was reflecting on that a few weeks ago, and I was listening to a talk about. Jewish traditions repeating the name, and then there's a song that is recited, a prayer that is recited when someone passes. And one of the beautiful things about all of this, about what we're doing here and about different traditions such as Judaism that it didn't mention, it ensures that the person who is grieving is with other people on some way, whether it's on Zoom or in person. When we have to come together as a group to remember somebody or to send merit for someone who is ill, it's a community act often, and doesn't have to be, but it can be. And that means the person who is in grief is not alone in those moments. Like there's Adin or someone with more understanding, Adin would know more than I do, but there was saying on the radio, there's a prayer where 10 people come together to say the prayer for the person who has passed on. That means that you are with 9 other people who care, who are sending merits and care and love and compassion and healing in their own way. And I thought that must be why we're supposed to come together and say their names or send merit or have the hungry ghost serve us, because we need each other. We need the community. So, yeah.
Yeah, so totally apart from any kind of supernatural craziness, you know, Ken Fielder asked to be on our list. He's a person who has joined us in the Cloud Zendo. He lives in Hawaii right now. He's going through some really, really difficult times. And so he asked to be on the list. And so when any of us who know him, we hear his name, like he's not alone, you know? So he can be thinking, like, at least with regularity, the whole Sangha calls me to mind. Adin.
Yeah, I think it's, I remember because I'm quite a bit of an introvert, and I remember when my father died, I just did not want to share such an intimate thing with everyone. But I remember at the synagogue, because I was prompted, I guess, from an authority figure, the rabbi, she was like, I want you you know, to please say things out loud. So, and that was sort of my way of announcing it and what my state of mind was, and also getting the feeling of support from the community, even though no one had to say anything. But yeah, it's sort of it's all of those things by saying it out loud. That was my experience anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, it's in a way to either put ourselves on that list, put somebody that we really care about, or put somebody who has passed on that list. Yeah, it's a little bit of a act of vulnerability and sharing. And I never, I kind of embarrassed to say, I'm not embarrassed. I mean, you just get to do what you want, right? I never put my dog on the list. It was really weird. Like I'm a Zen priest. I'm here. I'm other people, you know, they're welcome. You're welcome to put other beings on the list. And I just, it was like, it was too much. Just, I didn't really, maybe I'm still in denial, but maybe I'll put his name on there sometime, right? We all have our own processes with this. Paulette.
Thank you for this. Yeah, I mean, I think it's nice to put your name on the list or someone, an animal on the list. I just feel like so much happens below the surface. So what we're doing, you know, there's so much going on underneath the surface. I mean, thinking about people and sending them good, you know, good thoughts and love and I don't know what I'm trying to say, but the point is that I think putting, you know, saying people's names is a beautiful gesture. But I think we do a lot more than that. We kind of have, I'm constantly thinking of and sending like positivity to people. After my yoga class, I actually hold them in my thoughts for like 10, 15 minutes after the class. I think, you know, we're doing stuff like that all the time. Beautifully human gesture.
Yeah, and even those of us who are skeptics, like, said, well, this world is so much more. It's so much more than we think it is. We're at 12:15, but real quick, Brian.
If the people who spoke and gave us today's Dharma talk want to dedicate the merit of those contributions, they will be making a very, very large gift. So I just wanted to say thank you. I relish them.
Well, we dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.